thank you very, very much. Okay, thank you very much for having me back. I didn't know it was the first person you've invited back. I don't exactly what that bodes me, but maybe the last time you invite someone back, right? We'll see how it goes. So first of all, it's really, really great to see you. Was anyone here last year when I spoke about this time? Anyone in hands up? Little hands up? Oh, there's quite a few here. I don't know if you remember, we're only here for the food. It's yummy food. Last time we discussed the beauty parlour. We talked about Esther's beauty parlour and all the secrets involved. What were we talking about? Women going exfoliating for 6 months and putting on perfumes for 6 months, right? And we discussed how that was a very hidden message about the Jewish year being split up into two groups of 6 months. 6 months of exfoliate. I can't... Again, I have to ask people the right words. I know I've got an excellent pharmacist here. I mean, I was hearing all these amazing products. There's exfoliation or depilation, and there's either removing the hair or removing the root. I'm not sure exactly of the differences. But we talked about the 6 months of removing extraneous material from the body, that's hair and nails. That's what they did for 6 months. And then they put on makeup for 6 months. And putting on makeup for 6 months, the 6 months, basically, from Iyar to Tishrei, where you got busy doing yontem. You're busy doing mitzvahs. So the woman, as it were, the soul, it's inside of us, is called a woman, it's female, and sometimes referred to as female, and it beautifies itself by doing mitzvahs, and for 6 months it takes away that which is extraneous in its life. And we talked about that it's a hidden message. And that's like my pet topic. My pet topic is hidden messages that you get. A lot of people come to me and they say, oh, what's it all about? I read this, you know, they look at this blue book here. You've got this handy-dandy blue book. You've probably seen it around. The Art Scroll Stone Chumash, right? And they read it. You may or may not have seen it. And they read it and go, what's it all about? There's a lot of much. It's a bit, you know, obscure. A bit of it's a bit weird. What do we need all this detail for? A lot of it doesn't make any sense. What's going on? And the answer is there's tons and tons of hidden messages in what doesn't seem to make sense. So can I tell you a story? Can I tell you a story?
Yeah, can I tell you a story?
Yeah, why not? You're trying to do what you want. I was about to leave Jerusalem as I was taking up a post in Hale, in Manchester, all years ago, before the war. It was ages ago, and I went to go and say goodbye to all my Rabbonim. I went to say thank you very much for all the time that they've invested into me, and I wanted to keep up a relationship with them, and I wanted to say goodbye. And one particular rabbi I went to was a very, very, very holy Jew. He like really looked like a postcard for holy Jews, you know what I'm saying? He like had the long kind of, he had the long white beard and the long pants, and he kind of was really, really a very, very, very holy man. He's known for being a particularly holy man. So I wanted to say to him, thank you so much. I agree, I've learned so much from you. I felt it was a privilege to be around him while I was there. So he said to me, he kind of whispered to me, he says, where are you going? Where are you going? So I said, I'm going to go to England. He said, England, you're going to miss Yerushalayim. I'm going to miss, yes, I know, all my friends, my family. I had family in Jerusalem while I was there, all my Rabbonim. Everyone, no, I'm going to really miss Yerushalayim. But I said, well, the Kotel and all these beautiful synagogues that I've been to. And he said to me a very interesting thing, and it was extremely perplexing, and it took me a while to understand it. He said to me, there are no billboards in Jerusalem. Now, I would think that's a pretty weird thing to hear. That's true. There are no billboards in Jerusalem. There's a law in Jerusalem that you cannot have large advertising spaces on buildings to keep the aesthetic of the place going. I think there's also a law from the British that that's why all the buildings are clad in this kind of white Jerusalem stone. The British mandate, I believe, started that, and they kind of kept it going, so it kind of looks, you know, when you're in Jerusalem, it's all these kind of white buildings. You know, is that correct? I'm not exactly sure about the history about that. She said to me, there's no billboards. And you're really going to miss that. I said, there's a lot of things about Jerusalem that I would maybe thought out of this more, apart from not having billboards. Now, if you drive from Jerusalem to Tel Aviv to go to the airport, you'll notice when you start getting to Tel Aviv, they have these huge billboards advertising tyres and pizza, or whatever it is, as you start getting to Tel Aviv. Very, very large advertising spaces. And he says, you're really going to miss that. I want to talk to you about that. That's something that is extremely important. I believe there's a hidden message in the Megillah, that when you read what's going on in the Megillah, it's like it's details that you simply don't need to know about. Things that frankly are what seem on the face of it to be useless information. Get on with the meat and potatoes. I want to read the Megillah. I want to know there's a guy called Mordechai, there's a woman called Esther. I kind of get what I call like the Cockney baseline. You know, come on, tell me what's the story. Don't give me the Megillah. Even Gwenda, don't give me the Megillah. Tell me what's going on. We understand that in order to get the Megillah, you have to get the whole Megillah. You can't just miss a piece of the Megillah. You need the whole thing. There's a man called Mordechai, there's a man called this, they saved the Jews, it's an amazing thing, but I don't need to know very minor details. Last time the detail we focused on was a detail about how women prepared themselves for Ahasuerus, and that has deep, deep, deep meaning for the whole year. I'd like now to just focus on something else, which is interior design. Is there anyone here into interior design? Interior design? No. Okay. But if there's, someone here, I find interior design fascinating. I don't know how they know what they know. But they would like come to you and go, oh darling, that just doesn't belong there. That has to go there. You can't put that in those curtains. Who told them that that's right? But it's true. It is true. There is something about going into a beautifully decorated room, either in a hotel for a function or in someone's living room or something like that. When it's beautifully laid out, it gives you a very nice sense of feeling. Now, I can't specifically say it's that table and those curtains and the way that they've been set up, but there is something to it. We all know there's something to it, although you maybe can't put your finger on it exactly what it is. Now, don't go to sleep. I just want to talk a little bit about history for 1 second. I want to put ourselves in the shoes of the Jews of Shushan before they were invited to the famous party the king of Ahasuerus made. Very, very important thing that I couldn't get the BCE dates correct. I really tried to convert them up, but I couldn't find a calculator that goes back this far. But now we're in 5772, correct? 5772, that's all correct, right? Cast yourself back, if you will, to year 3390, which is about, and I haven't got my answer right, because I couldn't figure it out, it's about 260 BCE. 260 BCE. And there, and the Jews were in Babylon, which was actually undergoing a change of political turmoil between Persia and Media at the time. And the king at that time was a man called Cyrus. And he was quite a good king. And he decided to construct the second temple because the Jews had been in exile for around 70 years. And they were going to start building the temple again. Now, if you were a Jew living in Babylonia at that time, which is modern-day Iraq and Iran, it's that kind of area, you'd be very happy, I'm going to make Aliyah, right? I'm going back out! It's been great, yeah, and I'm going out. He died, and Ahasuerus became king in 3392, just 2 years later. And the first thing he did was put a stop to the building of the temple. That's the first thing he did. Now imagine you're Jewish, you booked your tickets with El Al, and you're packing up your house, and you're very, very excited, and you've got yourself a nice little property in Jerusalem, and everything's going great. Now Ahasuerus turns off the taps. Right, you get all the anona goes up, and you get everything changes, and the temple's been stopped. It's a very confusing time. And 3394, King Ahasuerus says, that's it, I've counted that there's been 70 years of Jewish exile. Now, he got it wrong. Very interesting, there's a Gemara that says, a king, when he comes in, let's say a king comes into being king in England, let's say, William becomes king, in December 2012. I'm making that up, right? So he would say he was king in 2012, and he'd count the whole year as one of the years of his kingship. Now, he hadn't actually been on the throne for the whole year. He could have been on the throne for the last day. But because he came on the throne for 2012, he considered that 2012, so you count the whole year. Ahasuerus was counting years like that, so he made a lot of miscalculations. Ahasuerus said, it's been 70 years. It wasn't really 70 years. It was only about 66 or 67 years, depending upon how you count. And therefore, the 70 years is over. Now, every Jewish king was terrified at the end of the 70 years. They were scared the Jews were going to go home and become a powerful political and military base, basically, with which to threaten anyone. That was a fear politically. Now, Ahasuerus died in 3406 and was succeeded by Darius, who was his son from Esther. And in 3408, the 470 years was up, and Darius said, rebuild the temple, and the Jews could go home. That's actually how it happened. Very interesting. Now, I want to talk about this party. This party, very bizarre details that we learn about this party. You're going to go read through them very, very quickly. And it seems to be like, Rachel, it's a hodgepodge. I don't need to know all these details. Get on with the party. Get on with what happened with Vashti, etc. Very, very interesting. So, but the Jews at the time were particularly confused and didn't know what was going to happen in their future. They didn't know where initially they finished their hair. We are going home. We're not going home. We weren't going home. And that's going to be stopped. And at that particular point, that's the point that Ahasuerus says, right, everyone has to come to my party. Just when you're feeling at the worst low of saying it's all over and our redemption is over, we were close to the destiny, we're not going to go home now, we have to cancel our ticket, that's when the party was thrown. Ahasuerus threw a party. What was the point of this party? The Al-Sheikh HaKadosh, Rav Moshe Al-Sheikh, and the Medrash explained it was a two-fold point. The first days of the party, it was a huge party, and he had treasure chests. full of diamonds and rubies and gold and pearls, and he opened them up, and he brought over every other king and every other dignitary from the 127 provinces that he had, and he showed off just how much money he's got. That's what he did, day after day, and every day he put out another 1,000 chests of gold and rubies to freak them out, basically, to make them feel as if this guy is so much resources, he's so powerful, he's so incredible, that if we bribe anyone, if we make a federation, if we gang up and try to mutiny, if we gang up and try to war against him, he's got the money, he's got the power, and he's going to win. Now, it's interesting, it says in the Megillah that Vashti held a party for all the ladies, and it was separate. The men went in one place, and the ladies went in another. And the Megillah said, right, just in case the men of the party decided to have a war and overthrow him right there, Vashti would hold all the women captive in order to stimulate talk. All the women would be held hostage, and they'd say, listen, if you want to ever see your wives again, you've got to talk to me. And that's why Vashti made a party for the women. The whole thing was a very political thing. That's the first half of the party. The next half of the party, once he scared everyone out of their wits, the next half of the party was specifically to invite the people to have a party, specifically the Jews. That was the second half of the party. That was his idea. And at this party, he's going to serve non-kosher food, non-kosher wine, and have all kinds of terrible things going on at this party, specifically to get the Jews to feel emotionally crushed. They're already at a low ebb. They already felt as if it's all over. They already saw the temple was being built, all the foundation, right, the bricks went up, and they put a thing on, you know the sign of the workman? You know what I'm talking about? The triangle with a workman. With a Babylonian hat. It's exactly the same in those days. So construction is being stopped, it's being halted, that's it, the temple is being stopped, you're not going to get it. So the Jews went there, and the design was to crush the Jews. Now how are we going to do this? Through interior design. Darling,
those curtains.
I mean, if that happens, get it crushed. I don't know, I think we're a bit more robust than that. But actually, if you look into it, I think you'll find it absolutely fascinating. I want to read you what seems to me, when I first read it, meaningless. Absolutely meaningless. Stuff I don't need. Oh, come here, I've got to listen to whoever's trying to do it. I'll save you soon, you cry, cut the chase, cut to chapter 2. I don't need anything in chapter 1. This is what he says in Esther 1:6. I'm just going to read it out, right? With hangings of white and green fine cotton and blue fabric, which is tachelet, like the blue fabric which is meant to be included, held together with cords of fine linen and purple, which is argaman, royal purple, extremely expensive to get, upon silver rods and marble pillars, gold and silver couches, that means the seats are made of gold and silver, laid upon a pavement of alabaster and marble, crushed with precious shell and onyx. Who needs to know that? Do you need to know that? Do I need to know that? It was a party. You got an invite, you turn up, you eat. What do I need to know about how to make it look? Do you hear my point? I don't care. Deep mysteries are being put out here. I mean, really deep. Please, God, I'm watching the time. I'm going to try to go through it as quickly as possible. Stop me, though, if you say, oh, no, I don't get that. Just stop. Put your hand up. Stop. Great. Asher HaKadosh says like this. The party that he made was open air. It's a huge courtyard. And it was like a pavilion. Everyone meets the Cardo in Jerusalem. The Cardo is like pillars, basically, right? That's how the party was. Lots and lots of pillars. And there were these beautiful drapery hangings over the pillars. And it made a pavilion. It made a pavilion. Now, if you were invited to this party, you would be awestruck by sheer opulence. But where would your eyes be looking? How would it work? What would you look at? Usually, it's the ladies that go into a place and see things, like the details, more focused than men. What would they be looking at first? Let's look again at what it was. The hangings at the very top that was above your head was white and green fine cotton. And that was attached to expensive blue fabric, held together with cords of fine linen, which is even more expensive in those days, a very complicated process to extract linen from the flax plant. And then there's purple, which is dyed with the most expensive dye, even then it's considered royal purple, which is a little shellfish related to the chela shellfish. And that was then mounted, they were then tied, they had marble pillars with silver rods coming out of them. So they tied these hangings with the purple to the blue and the green and the white. So if you look up, you'll see blue and green and white, with little purple ties, being rooted into marble pillars with solid silver beams. And the marble pillars would come down, and what were the chairs made from? The chairs, the seats were made from silver, that's the place you actually sit on it, and the legs were made of solid gold bullion. And what was the floor? Ahasuerus came from Media, fabulously wealthy. For him it says jewels were like nothing. What did he got? Sapphires, diamonds, rubies, emeralds, precious coral, and onyx, and had it all crushed into alabaster tiles, and paved the floor with the diamonds and the rubies and the sapphires. It's unimaginable wealth. I took my kids to Buckingham Palace to try to show them what it looks like in the house of a king or queen. And on that particular day, they opened up the banqueting halls. And I looked around, and my wife came around to me and says, this is nothing like the Mishkan. This is nowhere near. The carpet they had in Buckingham Palace for the royal banqueting was like a red tile carpet. Brother Hashash goes, it's nothing on a Hashash, right? Nothing. The money's on the label. You'd be looking at it, you couldn't believe it. Diamonds this big, like the Star of Lois, the Star of India, the Queen's. Be one of those on the floor. You'd be treading on those. Where would your eyes be looking? Can you tell me, can you explain to me what's going on with the interior decor? How's it? Now I want to ask you, who was his interior designer that said, darling, those curtains? Who was it that Hashash went to get his interior design done? Haman. Come on guys, get in close to the room. Haman! Haman was the interior designer. That was the modern day Hitler in Mashamay. What's he doing going to Haman, asking him how I should decorate this room? What's the connection between these hangings and the floor? What's changing as you go down?
Well,
money. Money. That's what's changing. When you look up, it's the cheapest. It's plain white hangings, cotton hangings. Then as you start looking down, it gets green. That's been tinted, that's been dyed. Then it becomes very, very complicated linen, and argument, and tachelis, and then silver rods, then solid marble pillars, and then the seats, look at the seats, silver and gold. Then look at the floor, there's diamonds in the floor. Where are your eyes going to look? You're going to look down. You're going to look down. Ahasuerus completed the interior design to make sure all the Jews around the table would keep their eyes down. Look at the food, look at the wine. And then, just as the party got underway, the Medrash says, he brought out ladies of ill repute to stand in front of all the men. Keep your eyes down. And the Jews were getting into trouble. Big trouble. Haman knew, if I can get them to do this, I get to draw a lot, and we can wipe these guys out. Interior design! It gets worse. Haman said to Ahasuerus, the Jews are clever people. What's the Jews' special power? If you were, we're all Jews here, we're sitting here, we're all Jews. What's our special power? What's our special unique gift that we've got? The Torah. What specifically do Jews have as well as the Torah? That's true. That's our special gift that he gave us. What's our power?
Cohesion.
That's true. Cohesion, togetherness. What else? Sanctity. Right, sanctity. How do we use that power? What's our risk? What's our danger? What would a Gentile be scared of? What would a Gentile... Prayer. Jews pray. With their sanctity, with their cohesion, together, you get all Jews in a room and they pray, God can't stop listening to them. He has to listen to them. 10 men get in a room and suffer together, he can't say no. He has to listen to you. Haman was scared. Maybe the Jews will get together, see what's going on. There'll be a couple of clever ones. You know, Jews are known for being clever. And they may pray. I've got an idea. What colours were the hangings? White, green, blue, purple. What colours do those remind you of? And where were they? Where were those colours, by the way? They were up there. They were up in the sky. That was the sky. The canopy he made was the colours. Everything else was the gold and the silver. Why were the colours up in the sky? What does that remind you of? A rainbow. And what does the rainbow remind you of? The flood. And what does the rainbow specifically tell you about the flood? He'll never do it again. Even if you're deserved of it. Even if you deserve it, even if you get yourself into trouble, and God says, I wish I could flood you all, I'll never do it again, and here's my sign, the rainbow. And he was going to lull them into a false sense of security by painting a rainbow over their heads. That should they look up to Hashem in heaven and say, Hashem, we're really in trouble here, God is getting out of this heaven, rainbow, do what you want, it's okay, I won't punish you. I promise I won't punish you again, do what you want, enjoy. There's one colour missing from the rainbow here. What colour's not in the hangings that wasn't the rainbow? Red. Now, why was red missing? Red is the colour that is associated with judgment. He was scared that if the Jews look up and they see red in that rainbow, I sinned, I'm so sorry, I know they're in the judgment, Yom Kippur, right? We've got to get rid of that red, said Haman. We'll put in purple. Purple is closest to red. We'll still get them, we'll lull them into the full sense of security that we'll get rid of purple, but we can't possibly have them seeing red. Heaven forbid they'll pray. And they got them. And they got them good. The interior design of that party was specifically designed to rip a Jew apart from Hashem subliminally. They had to go, and this is, I'm only talking about the interior design. Well, we haven't talked about the women that were parading, we haven't talked about the wine. There was wine, they came up, they asked you how old you are. You tell them truthfully how old you are. They then come out and give you wine which was always older than you. In a different goblet each time. Each goblet was more beautiful. They said, have you had goblet one? I'll give you goblet two, this one's got diamonds on. And each wine was a better vintage. Specifically designed to get the Jew in trouble. What happens? Mordechai and Esther. They got us out of it. Adar is a time that even when subliminally we are being attacked from left and right, you can overcome. Mamon b'simcha. It's a time of great joy. That's the source of our great joy. You can do what you like to us. Adar's my month. My name's Mordechai. My Hebrew name's Mordechai. I feel it. Adar is a wonderful time. It's very exciting. How interesting that Haman was the interior designer and thought so carefully about the colours and keeping everyone's eyes down. It's my belief that we live in a world full of messages. When that rabbi, that wise rabbi, said to me, you're going to miss the fact there's no billboards. What was he saying? Why did he say that? He's a big rabbi. Why is he talking about billboards? There are something, I don't know, Torah-based. That's Torah-based. Wherever you go, you're bombarded with messages. Input, data, people telling you how you have to think, what you have to buy, what you have to be, what you should look like, what you should think about, what you should aspire to, who you should be, who you should throw your children up to be, what religion is, what it isn't. Maybe there is a God, maybe there isn't. It's everywhere. You can't go anywhere without feeling. It's impossible not to be affected by it. Coca-Cola did a thing about subliminal messages back in the 50s when it was kind of allowed. Nobody really knew. And they had them in the cinemas. They would have before the main program. They'd have these matinees or trailers. And they would flash very quickly in the screen saying, buy Coca-Cola. Buy Coca-Cola. So fast, you couldn't see them with your eyes.
50 seconds.
Something like that. I don't know exactly the frame rate, but it was so fast that you could perceive it. But you didn't see it, if you know what I mean. Like, you couldn't see it with your eyes and say, I saw the word Coca-Cola there, but your mind took it in. They saw unbelievable sales rates being boosted at those particular times. People going out and saying, I fancy Coca-Cola. Because it works. Advertising works. It's a multi-billion pound industry. You advertise something, people buy it. They know it works. People, we're being advertised to. And not everything that we're, all the images and the concepts and the phrases and the ethoses that are advertising to us are good for us. And the people that are designing it aren't our friends. Adar is a time to overcome it. Adar is a time when you can feel it. That's what this concept of Mamon b'Simcha, you can truly feel. Reattach your heritage. Get, do a mitzvah. Be involved with the faith. Put up mezuzahs. If you put up mezuzahs, check your mezuzahs. Do something. But doing that thing means you're not being blasted out, but I'm driving here behind a bus and there's a thing telling me about my car insurance. I can't go anywhere without someone trying to tell me something. There's that little square behind the back of the bus that says, are you paying too much for your car insurance? I haven't thought about my car insurance. I did my car insurance. I'm here. What's your problem? Leave me alone with my car insurance. No, you've got to think about that. Why do I have to think about that? Because you're telling me to? That's right. I have no choice in the matter. Billboards.
You have no choice in the matter. You live in that environment, you're affected by it. Adar is the time to reconnect with that sensitivity that we may have lost. To realize there's someone trying to make me think about something, which actually I don't need to think about right now. And worse than that, maybe someone's trying to make me think about something which is treif. Something I shouldn't be thinking about. It's not my fault. I'm being bombarded by this. SMSs. I was with someone in a car. I was taking my brother-in-law around Manchester, and they have those signed up to this thing on their mobile phone where they get adverts. We were driving by a restaurant, and the phone beeped off saying, come into this restaurant now. We've got a special. Now, we have no intention of going to, but that restaurant has signed up that everyone that's in a particular geolocation within, so I don't know, they told them, come in, but we've got a special on burgers. Come and buy our burgers. And my brother-in-law was very impressed. That's such a clever advertising gag. I would never have thought. Maybe I'd go in and have a burger. You can't walk anywhere. Someone's dragging you and hucking you. You can't walk down the street in peace. And it's going to get worse. They'll figure out other things. They'll figure out other things. It's even more clever than that. Adar is the time of overcoming that. We got into big trouble with this back in 260-ish BCE. And to tell you the truth, we're in trouble with it now. We're getting such mixed messages over Judaism, over Israel, over whether or not God exists. It's a mess. You look anywhere, and it's always Israel's fault. It's always the Jews' fault. You can't get anything right, right? Es Hashem, this Adam, this time when you read this Megillah, when you see these words are for you and me right now in this generation. There's hangings of white fine linen and green beautiful linen above your heads right now, and you are being affected by them. Now is the time to sensitize yourself to realize, at least know you're being affected. At least know you're being advertised to. And it's subtle. And I wish for this year, this coming Adar, and this Purim, should be a good Purim where you really feel connected to your heritage, connected to the mitzvahs. As I say now, there's the 6 months of pampering yourself with cosmetic is starting to come up. Pesach, right? From Pesach, you're busy, right? This is not you're busy doing stuff away from the end of Tishrei, right? Please God, this new 6 month cycle of pampering yourself and getting close to Hashem is going to be extremely successful for all of you and all of your family. And please God, this year be not like the year in 3360 where Dari said, we're not going to build a base of this year, I'm going to build a base of this year, I'm going to go home, please God, we're here, we can go home. Finally, please God, be based in Mikdash. Wonderful.